Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol. I wouldn't say they greedy, but they come back.
Welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show presented by RotoCurve. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. DubDeuces85 on all forms of social media. Well, it is an interesting Sweet 16 that we're having thus far. Gonzaga took care of business. Got a little too confident in my betting abilities today and did not make the FSU plus 7.5. Johnny gets bailed out by the OT for Purdue money line, but the Michigan money line is in trouble, folks. Looks like we're in trouble. It was not a good day of betting for me. DFS is pretty decent. I did play Kenny Wooten. Oh, I have a deep, deep hatred for Ryan Klein. He has been in smash spots for me before and gotten 12 fantasy points. Decided to play Kenny Wooten over him. Is not going well, folks. Ryan Klein puts up 41 fantasy points. Kenny Wooten, 2.5 at the half. That's going to keep me from the money in most contests. Thankfully, the Survivors, it's actually a double-edged sword. The Survivors overlaid, so if you played the $16 Survivor tonight, you automatically advanced to day two because it was 500 people advanced and it only got 480. The $160 Survivor, you only had to beat 15 people to survive because of the overlay. Double-edged sword, meaning contests tomorrow are half as big as they were today. The jam overlaid by 1,600 people. Tomorrow's jam is only 5K to first instead of 10K to first. So, you know, I don't think it's any fault of our own. It's the, you know, Major League Baseball started today. Woo-woo! And, you know, the things happen, right? So everyone sunk their money into Major League Baseball. I am not one of those people, but I get that people did. I see Johnny waiting on the line now. Let's get him. Let's get his thoughts. Let's get Johnny through. Michigan money line is in trouble, Johnny. What the hell's going on?
Well, this is like the opposite of what I thought would happen. I thought Michigan offensively would be able to knock down shots, and Texas Tech would struggle offensively. This is very, very weird, but like I said, it's hard to be 100% right, but I do have to beat my chest a little bit here and talk about Rick Barnes. I mean,
Rick Barnes
that was kind of like,
yeah, but do you know what the Rick Barnes came all the way back, brother.
Yeah, but do you know what the problem is?
He's still Rick Barnes?
The problem is here. The reason Rick Barnes is no longer playing is because of Ryan Klein. How in the fuck did this happen?
I don't know, man. I didn't play Ryan Klein. I'm the fish of the night. I played Kenny Wooten over Ryan Klein. Trent Forrest would have been a nice play over Kenny Wooten. Dave Moretti, pretty much everyone in the price range of Kenny Wooten would have been nice. Anyways, Texas Tech, there's another bucket by Jarrett Culver as Texas Tech goes up by 19. Officially, mathematically, unless something very drastic happens, Johnny, we are not going to be winning Michigan money line tonight. I don't think Michigan's offense is going to be able to. Well, there's an and one, Ignas. I just don't think Michigan has the firepower to get back in this game.
Well, we're 0-for-12-3, but let's talk about the Purdue game because that's the game, so far the game of the day here. Our guy Carson did not leave the floor tonight. Walter played 45 minutes. I mean, I'm sure he had value, 29-4-3. I mean,
he had 40 fantasy points. The problem is, for 4K cheaper, Ryan Klein had 41 fantasy points. Dude, come on.
Walter.
Sometimes
Walter.
I hate
DFS. Grant Williams, the Admiral, did the same. It didn't matter. I mean,
I will say I'm impressed with Purdue because Jordan Tennessee got a good Jordan Bowden sucked. Kyle Alexander wasn't very good, but Jordan Bowden off the bench had 30 fantasy points. He was a big factor. Admiral had a huge second half. Grant Williams had a productive second half. You know, Lamonte Turner had a productive second half. Like, all their guys, there's another bucket for Texas Tech. All their guys had productive second halves, but Purdue, with Ryan Klein shooting like 89% from long range, they had Tennessee's number. Tennessee's guys, everybody but Jordan Bone produced for Tennessee, and they still lost. So they weren't winning this game tonight no matter what.
No, do you know the one thing that just bugged the fuck out of me watching that? How the hell did Purdue miss so many free throws? What was that?
I don't know, man. Is that going to be something that creeps up?
Well, Edwards shoots 86% and missed like 6 free throws tonight.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I mean,
the free throw shooting that could be something that creeps up here in the tournament.
I mean, we could talk a little bit about Florida State. Here's the problem. This is pretty much what bit them, Walter. They went from a very deep team to only having 7 guys play tonight because of obviously the funeral, and then Kumaji got in all kinds of foul trouble, and
they did a nice job on Cavangeli. Cavangeli had a nice game still. You know, he almost hit 4X. He was just under with 20 fantasy points. They did a nice job on him. But do you see how good Cavangeli has become? Like, when he's out there, he's hitting jumpers, he's blocking shots. Like, that kid next year is going to be something special. But, yeah, the Florida State, something that they've had all year with their depth, it betrayed them today. You know, Kamaji, it was pretty obvious Kamaji was going to get in foul trouble. I mean, I saw that coming from a mile away. That's why I was on Cavangeli. I thought Terrence Mann had a nice game, you know, 26 fantasy points. Trent Forrest had the game of his life. And, yeah, Gonzaga just proved right there, you know, that they're – Jesus Christ, Jarrett Culver is owning Michigan right now.
Michigan just proved – Michigan's all of 13
on
another
three.
Level
right now.
And Walter,
that's
sometimes what makes the gambling aspect of it hard, because you can't predict a team going 0 of 13 from threes and having 29 points at the 10-minute mark. I mean,
no,
obviously,
it's the same way in DFS, bro. It's the same way in DFS. Kyle Guy, I roster Kyle Guy in Mania. He goes 0 for 10. He's a 44% shooter from long range. Shoots 0 for 10 from distance. And if he hits his average, I advance. So you're right. I mean, I get it, man. It's a bad variance. It's a bad variance beat. When Dunkel calls in here in a little bit, he'll tell us about bad variance beats.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's gonna be good talking to John. Me and him talk on Twitter on the Messenger. He knows his stuff. He's a pretty sharp dude. Now, Walter, see, here's the thing. Betting tomorrow is extremely hard, and I'll tell you why. All the games tomorrow, the spreads are inflated, every single one of them. So it's more you're going to have to pick and choose your battles. I mean, I don't see – my situation here is the Kentucky game, I don't have to bet on because of my future bet on them. So I technically already have a bet on them. I just need them to win and get to the Elite Eight.
They can't stop Culver. Oh, they finally got a block. Yeah, man, I don't know. Nazir Little, we're going to get into the games here in a minute. We're just kind of goofing off. Nazir Little is sick, by the way. As soon as I got the news that he was sick and missing practice, I immediately messaged you and said, I need you to lock in Auburn +5 because I felt like Auburn might go down a little bit. I don't know if it has yet, but I just felt like that might. So I had to go Auburn +5 and lock that in.
Let me see what the line is now actually for you, because I could tell you everything that we're looking at, Walter. And let's see. All right, Walter. So for tomorrow, LSU Michigan State game is stuck at 6. Auburn North Carolina actually shifted a little bit, Walter. Right now, Auburn's again in 4.5. But you want me to tell you what the biggest line change was? When the line opened up, the total was 161.5. It's now up to 165. And okay, this is interesting to me. The spread on the Duke game went down. It went from 8 to 7. See, the thing is, it's because 8's probably too much, but I'm not suggesting a Virginia Tech bet here because there's certain things in life, Walter, that you can't really do. And knowing how, and this is getting ridiculous, okay, Michigan, they for showing up.
Texas Tech not missing a shot, bro. They're not missing a single shot.
Michigan has 29. The question is, does this fucking team hit a 3 tonight, Walter?
I just gotta laugh, bro. I just pissed away so all my money I won last night is gone, brother. I was wrong about everything.
Not completely, because you still have the 20.
I still got a little bit. I still got the money I started with. But yeah, I was way wrong about FSU. It looked good for a while. That plus 7.5 looked real good. Like 5 minutes left, I thought I was gonna get there.
Yeah, no.
I would have been mad. I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been mad if I got to this game and this is what Michigan did on the last leg. That would have been.
What I would have had you do though, Walter, and this is pretty much paramount. I don't know if we would have got a chance to do it though, but if we would have had a chance to do it, I would have had you take the other side and hedge it and guarantee yourself some money back.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there would have been that situation, and Michigan has 31 points with a little over 8 minutes left.
Yeah, they don't have the offense. Look at Brad Dekus. Brad Dekus have a game, bro. 15-10.
No,
Ignas is playing the game of his life, but they're still losing.
No, and I called Brad Dekus. We both did. I said he would have a good game. I just didn't. They have 31 freaking points, Walter, and this game's almost over, and Oregon's only down 3. See,
if he hits that, it's over.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Texas Tech has advanced to the Elite Eight. It is over. It is over. They're not missing a shot, Johnny. That's just bad variance, bro. That's ridiculous.
And
a charge! Oh my God, Michigan's done. Game's over.
Yeah.
Mercy rule. They need the mercy rule.
Hey, here's a question I have though, and this is it. Gonzaga's gonna have to deal with this team's defense. I mean, I will say Gonzaga can score it easier than Michigan can, but I know Texas Tech can play defense. I don't know how bothered they can make Gonzaga, but if I had to set the line, I would say Gonzaga by 4 or 5.
And Texas Tech has done a fantastic job on teams, but remember when West Virginia played Texas Tech and they ran Texas Tech out of the building because they were hitting shots and they were athletic and they were high-flying? Mm-hmm. Gonzaga is West Virginia times a billion, right? So they have a same – their makeup of the roster is very similar. They've got a solid point guard. They've got guys who can jump out of the building. They've got guys who can hit threes, and they can score at will. So that type of makeup, and please don't come back to me, you know, guys on Twitter, and be like, just compare Gonzaga to West Virginia. I'm not saying they're the same. I'm saying the makeup of their athleticism is similar and gave Texas Tech a lot of problems. But I also thought Buffalo's athleticism was going to give them problems, and they got blown out.
So I'm worried for
Gonzaga in this. After seeing what Texas Tech is doing to Michigan, I'm very worried for Gonzaga. Extremely.
I will say this. I think Clark could stop Culliver. I could say that.
You see Clark tonight, man? Clark had a bad first half, and dude still ends up with 45 at the end of the game. I mean, Clark is playing just amazing basketball right now. Good thing you didn't take that player prop, by the way, because Rui got quiet, man. Rui doesn't look too comfortable still.
No. Here's the thing I wanted to bring up, Walter. And this is Gonzaga's program. They always get a sick-ass transfer from somewhere. I mean, they dragged Clark out of San Jose State of all the random-ass shitty places to get a guy from. I mean, the funny part is of how bad San Jose State's been since I've been a kid. And they really just tapped San Jose State and really got Brandon Clark. But it's not even that. You get Brandon Clark, and then at Walter, I know this is still a touchy subject, Nigel Williams-Goss.
Well, how about Matthews from Cal, right?
And our boy from West Virginia.
They had the guy from Missouri as well. Remember him?
Missouri.
So let's see. Okay. Brandon Clark was on a team. So here's the San Jose State team. It had Ryan Willich on it, who played for Xavier this year. He transferred to Xavier. Brandon Clark, who was a beast for them. And then, it's kind of weird that they had, you know, a couple of rotational guys like that. Gonzaga does a phenomenal job with transfers, and they always have. And I don't know if you've had a chance, Johnny, to look at the transfer portal. There's a lot of names in the transfer portal and a lot of good players. So Jonathan Williams from Missouri is who they had. They had Jonathan Williams, Jordan Matthews from Cal, Nigel Williams-Goss from obviously the Huskies. But Gonzaga does that. Gonzaga in Nevada has been linked to pretty much every single transfer, especially the grad transfers that are in the portal right now. UNLV, Shakur Justin. You know, he's a grad transfer. He's looking at Nevada. He's talking to Gonzaga. There's a couple other teams. Nate Sestina from Bucknell. He's talking to Kentucky. It's possible Reed Travis replacement. So there's a lot of moving pieces for transfers. It almost feels like a free agency, you know. It honestly does. All right, well, let's cover these games tomorrow while we wait. Dunkel's got some stuff going on, his work. I don't know if he's going to call in or if he's still going to get to, but the show must go on, so let's go ahead and talk about LSU versus Michigan State. I'm worried. I can't even believe Michigan got beat like this. All right, so Michigan State projected a win on KenPom, 80-72. LSU 59th in tempo ranking. Michigan State, of course, 180th. So first things first. For Michigan State, we're going to be looking at, Aaron Henry. His price on DraftKings is still just 4.6. A lot of people had jumped off the Aaron Henry train after his game against Bradley. You know, he had 13 fantasy points. People didn't really like that. Now his price has gone down another 200. But when he was 4.8 against Minnesota, I told everybody who would listen, he's still playing 30 minutes. I know he had a bad game, but for under 5K, we're getting a guy playing 30 minutes. He's going to get rebounds, you know, and he did just that. He had 9 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 24 fantasy points. Reward for that, his price goes down 200 to 4.6. It's a massive pace boost against LSU. LSU has given up some big rebounding games, so Aaron Henry is a guy that I absolutely love here. Matt McQuaid at 4.6 is a guy that you could look at as well. His price has gone down from 5.2 all the way down to 4.6. What does Matt McQuaid like to do, Johnny? He likes to shoot threes. What does LSU's defense do? They give up threes. Matt McQuaid is definitely a guy that you could look at. Xavier Tillman and Kenny Goins and Nick Ward are all fine plays. Nick Ward's only 5'4", which is a crazy low price for him. But, you know, his minutes haven't really been there. He played 20 against Minnesota. But I don't know. I don't know if I can fully get behind using him just yet. And then Cassius Winston's price went down. It seems like DraftKings trying to sucker us all in and make the pricing soft to get people to play. You know, they dropped Cassius Winston's price by 400 down to 8.8, which is a little tough to you know, kind of fade. But that's a really good price for him against LSU. So I like him there as well. For LSU, you know, Naz Reid at 6.9 is nice. Tremont Waters at 8K is a very juicy price. You got Skylar Mays there, Javonte Smart, Cabal Bigby Williams. These are all the usual cast of characters for LSU. So GPPs, I especially like Tremont Waters. I think Winston is going to give him issues, but the 8K price is right up Tremont Waters' alley. What do you think is going to happen here, man? You're going to be, you know, this is a game that seems like it might be tougher to bet. Because I could see LSU, you know, running Michigan State out, but I could also see Michigan State running them out. So, or it's most likely going to go down to LSU's going to get out to a fast start, and they're going to give up the lead, and then it's going to come down to the end. That's probably what's going to happen.
Well, here's the thing. Well,
Culver.
I mean, it's sick what they're doing. Well, Michigan has 35 points in 5 minutes left. That's insane. I mean, Walker, I knew the game was going to be going under, which, I mean, unless something drastic happens, it's definitely going under 126. But, like I said, that's the kind of the unknown variance in the betting world, Walker. You're seeing the other side of it. And right now I'm watching Oregon and Virginia, and this is a one-point game, Walter.
Oregon's the real deal, man. I need Kenny Wooten. I need Kenny Wooten back. What? All right. So, but what do you think is going to happen in this LSU Michigan State game? We're digressing a little bit. What do you think is going to happen here? Who do you like?
Well, here's the thing, man. I think Michigan State money line is a good bet. I don't know if they cover six. Here's how you have to look at the Big Ten. Obviously, Michigan's going home tonight, and you have to factor in, do you think Michigan State is going home tonight? And I don't think Izzo is going to be underprepared.
No.
And
you know what? Beeline's a good coach, too. You know, and he had his guys prepared, but, you know, I kind of thought this would happen in Michigan. They're offensively, they're just limited. You know, they're
limited. I didn't think Texas Tech would hold them under 40 points, though, with 355 left. That, like I said, Walter, there's going to be the good and there's going to be the bad. It's part of it, because let me tell you something, Walter. Nobody, betting-wise and on DFS, it's hard to cash every time you put in a ticket. And that's what makes the challenge so great. And that's part of it. I mean, yes, I was dead-ass wrong on Michigan. But at the end of the day, my track record speaks for itself. So for the times I'm wrong, I'll just say this. For the times I'm wrong, 75% of the time I'm going to be right. So it's a loss. You move on from it. You learn from it. And then you move on to tomorrow because it's all you can do.
For sure. All right. And you know what? It takes a big man to admit when they're wrong. You know, I in November, for me, when I talk about it, you know, I'm running at a ridiculously 85%+ win rate. And then it starts slowing down as these computer guys catch up. And, you know, I missed on the FSU plus 7.5 tonight. So, you know, I can definitely, you know, admit when I'm wrong, too. And I'm not quite the better you are. I don't get the 26K in 2 days. I'm going to get there, though. Speaking of big money, this tennis sharp is calling us in right now. Dunkel, long time no talk, my man. How are you?
What's going on, guys? Walt, especially you. How are you?
You know, I'm doing all right. Played Kenny Wooten tonight, but I'm other than that, I'm doing great.
What's going on,
is that,
John?
Is that Johnny? How you been?
Ah, John. Well, I'm taking my lumps right now with Michigan. I did not see this one coming. It's all right though. At least I was right on Purdue.
Yeah, I gave out Tech and Tech money line today for the package, but it's okay because last weekend I took a full fist up my ass, so it's completely fine. I'm due for a few wins.
John, did you ride Purdue?
Yeah, I had those were the only really two I gave out today. I didn't touch this Oregon game. I didn't touch the Gonzaga game. Those were the only two I gave out. So I was, yeah, I was happy to luckily pull out Purdue late.
You know, that shouldn't have been as hard as it was if they made their freaking free throw. That was weird. Because they normally shoot free throws good, especially Edwards. When he missed the six, he missed everything. I thought, so this is the way it's going to be tonight.
So man, it's been a really long time, Mr. Dunkel. So you're working with the site now. You're giving out picks. You're doing not just college basketball. You're doing tennis, and a couple other things now, right?
Yeah, tennis, baseball. I do it on the YouTube channel. I don't sell picks or anything. I don't like to use the word tout. The only reason I did I gave out picks for the tournament was just because I had a bunch of people ask me for them. I guess the saying goes, you suck one dick and you're a cocksucker the rest of your life. So I can't sit here and tell you guys I'm not a tout, because that's ultimately what I just did. That's not really what I'm looking to do. All the content I give on the channel is free, and that's how it's going to be moving forward.
Well, you're very good at what you do, John, and you're knowledgeable. That's why I like to talk with you. I mean, like I said, I never guarantee anything, and I don't consider myself a talent. I'm just good at what I do normally, and at least I know my future's bet with Kentucky got more of a boost with Washington out of a cast. Here's the thing, and I'll say this on the air because I don't care. If Washington did not play against Houston, I probably would have bet Houston tomorrow. Now that the guy's actually playing, I'm actually feeling upbeat about the fact that this team could get to the Elite Eight tomorrow.
Riding that futures. All right, well, we got Dunkel on the line here. If anybody's listening live, I know we're on pretty late for you East Coast guys, 929-477-1107 is the number to call. What about this LSU? We're just kind of talking about the slate a little bit this while we're laughing at Texas Tech's ridiculous shooting percentage. Are you betting on the LSU-Michigan State game?
If I was, that's not exactly a game I like in either side. There's games I like tomorrow. That's not really a game I like. It's one of those games where, from a talent perspective, both teams are a little more even, I think, than people actually think. LSU has so many talented scorers, and they just, you know, they run up and down the floor with the best of them. Now, Michigan State should be able to slow them down, and they should present plenty of physical challenges for them. But six does feel like a big number. You know, for me, it's probably going to be a stay-off spot. But, you know, I know that people have been counting out LSU since they lost their coach. But, you know, my big thing with LSU is their first two games dominated the first half and then almost got beat in the second half of both games. You know, they got a real shit performance from Yale. They beat a team in Maryland who most people can't stand. And even they almost even got beat in that second half. So it was just, you know, it's tough to trust LSU, and you start to worry if LSU doesn't start out the way they started out those other two games, which they probably won't here against Michigan State. You know, will they be able to sustain long term second halves? I know some people are saying it has to do with, you know, their lack of second half adjustments, or have been because they don't have the head coach. Without Wade, they've you know, maybe those adjustments just aren't what they were, and you know, other teams are taking advantage. And you figure a coach like Izzo with a few days to prep probably has an advantage there, so it's going to be a stay-away spot for me. But I could see the conversation going in either direction. If someone was to convince me of MSU or LSU, I could definitely see it. Totals moved a bunch in favor of the under, so if you're into that type of stuff. But other than that, the game, I don't even have a lean in that game. I'm just going to be off it.
I actually agree.
I feel the same way. Me and Johnny have been talking about that the last couple of days. LSU, especially with the way they're playing in the first half, it seems like they kind of go on cruise control, and maybe their coach isn't disciplined enough, you know, or experienced enough to continue to have their foot on the throat. And it seems like they let off in the second half, and that team comes back. If Yale would have shot the way they did in the second half and the first half, they would have beat LSU, I think. I was on Yale. I was wrong, but, you know.
Well, I mean, they covered the line for me, but and I agree with John. It's more of this. The line's inflated, and it's going to sound stupid why it is. it has a lot to do with the coaching matchup. Tom Izzo versus Tony Benford. I mean, look, no disrespect. The guy got to the Sweet 16. Not exactly his team, but... And the other kind of variable in this whole situation is this. You have to think that Tom Izzo finds a way to take Reed or Bigsby Williams out of this game completely. I mean, he does have bigs like Goins and Ward who could get them into foul trouble in theory. I don't know how healthy Ward is, but, I mean, he's a body who is pretty skilled, and I don't know how healed his hand is, but it to me, Walter, it's a game that I personally am probably not going to play unless I money line Michigan State with something, but it's not anything I really feel strongly enough to do. Personally, like I said, when the bracket came out and I told, and me and you both saw it, Walter and John, you saw it, I assumed it was going to be Michigan State and Duke in the Elite Eight just because Izzo, Coach K, why not? But in LSU, athletically speaking, keep up with Michigan State? Yes. But the thing about it, and I want to bring this up, I think Michigan State is a better defensive basketball team. And I think that's pretty much what the difference is in that game and why I think Michigan State will ultimately win the game. Covering six, no clue. Win, I think they do. Just because I think Michigan State's going to find Duke, Coach K, Izzo, Elite Eight, ratings, money. It's what it is.
For sure. All right, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either way. If LSU won, I wouldn't be shocked. If Michigan State won, I wouldn't be shocked. Let's move on to the next game, Auburn versus North Carolina. KenPom has an 82-78 for North Carolina. Auburn is 158th tempo ranking, so they're very fast. We know North Carolina, they're sixth in the nation in tempo. They're going to be very fast as well. That line's starting to move a little bit. Was it plus 4.5 now for Auburn? I got that plus 5 for you, Johnny, because and before the news of Nazir Little, I was excited about plus 5 for Auburn because I think they can hang with them. First and foremost, it's still a DFS show, so I'm going to talk about the DFS guys, but that line seems pretty advantageous to me. Kenny Williams has a hamstring issue. He has been held out of practice all week, so he is going to be questionable. I'm sure he will play, but how limited he is, we will see. And Nazir Little, it just came out today. Now, he's sick, and he was held out of practice today due to an illness. Severe flu, I think, is what they're calling it. So we just saw Nazir Little. You know, Johnny and I have been talking about him all year, but he kind of had his coming out party to the general public last game against Washington. You know, he looked very good. It's like the lottery pick that people have been touting him as. But without Little off the bench and without Kenny Williams, that's going to be kind of tough for North Carolina, especially if Auburn starts getting pretty lit from the three-point line, which is pretty much their M.O. DraftKings prices is pretty crazy. They lowered down Jared Harper to 7.5. Kobe White is 7.4. If he is not playing Kobe White tomorrow at 7.4 on DraftKings, I'll say that idiotic dick comment. Send me all your head-to-head invites because you need to be playing him at 7.4. He's been over 8K. The last month and a half, he's a mortal lock for 4X or above there, especially if Kenny Williams is limited or out and Nazir Little is out. Kobe White's going to be playing the entire game in Chucky. Cameron Johnson at 7.8 is a very strong play, and of course Luke May at 8.2 is a guy you can always look at. Don't like him quite as much against the Auburn interior as I do Cam Johnson and Kobe White, but he's definitely playable. I also think Okiki's going to grab a ton of rebounds. I've personally been targeting against that North Carolina interior for forwards all season. It's been pretty profitable for me, so Okiki is a guy that you want to look at as well, 7.3. And Bryce Brown, there was a story on Twitter yesterday about how before practice he shoots about 500 jumpers, during practice takes a bunch, and then after practice another 500. So this guy, he's a good three-point shooter for a reason. He practices. What do you think, Johnny? Are you going to be diving in here on the Auburn bet now, or are you still kind of holding off?
No, I mean, I think and I'll let John chime in on this as well. As soon as the Little news broke, it dropped a half a point. And again, I don't really pay attention to line moves because it's just public perception here. I do think Auburn's the right side with 4.5. I'm not a total guy. I don't mess with totals unless it's on in games and it's just a huge advantage. But John, the total jumped from 161 to 165. I could tell you based on that movement, the over's probably a good bet. But I think Auburn does have the athletes to run with Carolina. The way they shot the ball against Kansas was pretty impressive, even though Kansas sucks. But I do have to think that Auburn will keep this close, especially because if Little happens to be out and he might be sick enough where he can't play, even though Walter, even if you hate Kenny Williams, he is a body. And if both of them happen to be out, that's really challenging the depth they have or the lack thereof at that point.
Yeah, well, what do you think, Uncle Dunkle? You know, this it seems like it could potentially be a popular one. When you see stuff like that, you know, where it starts jumping down a little bit, Auburn plus 4.5 now instead of 5, do you react to that, or do you kind of think that's you know, a little bit of a sucker bet?
So it depends on the situation. I don't consider you know, anything in particular trap bets or sucker bets or square bets. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you're looking to get the best number. So if this is climbing, right? We'll start with the total. Total's climbing. So total's up to, I'm seeing it at most spots at 164.5 or 165. You know, you have to ask yourself, am I going to chase steam? That's the technical term for it. In relation to, well, I could have got it at 160, but I see the market's moving it to 164. Let me chase steam with the market and get it at 164. Or do we look at it as, well, you know what, I would have bet it over at 160. At 164, not so favorable. If it goes to like 166, I'm actually going to like it under. Now, I'm not saying that I will, but I'm saying when you're creating scenarios for how you're going to bet this type of action, you know, you need to give yourself two perspectives. Well, I would bet this game over at this number. I would bet it under at this number. Anywhere in between, it's a no play. For me, if you're gonna be somebody who bets this over at 165, I'd have to ask you, why weren't you looking at the line when it was at 160? Did you like it? You never want to be overly swayed by line movement. I mean, I get it. You know, look, obviously a tremendous amount of money has moved a line in this scenario. But keep in mind, when you see something like that, you want to ask yourself, hey, so are the books 4.5 points wrong? Because right now they opened at 160.5. It's 164.5. So technically, if I was to bet under 164.5, I kind of have what the books felt was a fair open, minus 4.5. Or you could call it, I guess in that case, plus 4.5 if you go in favor of the under. So I don't look at – like when you see a bunch of line movement like that, I don't look at it like, oh, well, I need to jump on with them. I basically, you know, look at every game the same, have a number I like, a number I don't like. But if this keeps climbing, if this gets to 166, 166.5 before the game starts, probably going to like it under. I mean, I get it. These teams can the Temple's going to be extremely frantic. Temple's going to be extremely frantic, and I get it. But that's a lot of points in a Sweet 16 game. Now, what I will tell you is, and I'm sure you guys already know this, North Carolina has a tremendous advantage on the offensive glass. You got to figure they're easily going to pull down 20 to 21 offensive rebounds here.
Yeah.
And I know that's a big number, but I mean, look, you got to figure Auburn's going to be one and done for the most part on their trips down. And then, you know, on North Carolina's trips down, they're going to be able to get those easy putbacks in. So for me, the spread is the actual spread on the game of being 4.5 or 5.5. To me, doesn't matter as much because if Auburn's going to hit their threes, more than likely they're going to win this game. I mean, if they're going to hit their threes at close to sub 45% and they wind up banging down like 12 of them again. Now, I know they've hit at least 12 threes in both these games. If they hit 12 again and maybe that number climbs with the extra possessions that North Carolina is going to provide to them with their tempo, you know, maybe that number climbs to 15, they're going to win this game outright. The problem is if they don't, if that number is like 40% or 38% or 36%, North Carolina is going to run this team right out of the gym, especially considering how good they're going to be on the offensive glass here. Now, Auburn's going to hack away at North Carolina. I don't think that matters as much. It's just when you look at how you can break down this game analytically, you know, Auburn's probably not going to get to the free throw line that often. North Carolina's going to find themselves there. North Carolina's going to have a ton of offensive rebounds. You know, Auburn may be able to force some turnovers. You know, obviously they're very good at it, but, you know, North Carolina's got a ton of good ball handlers, so I don't know how relevant that's going to be. It's just like when you draw this up in every scenario, for me, I'd rather lay the chalk with North Carolina here, and I'm a dog better. But there's just too many advantages for North Carolina. Look, Auburn has to hit their threes, bottom line. They have to hit their threes, what I would consider at sub 45% tomorrow to beat North Carolina. And if they don't, like I said, to me, it's going to be a 10-point-plus run away for North Carolina.
And that's Auburn's like whole thing, right? Even Bruce Pearl talks about it, that, you know, that they have to be hitting their threes. That SEC championship game against Tennessee, they just chucked and chucked and chucked. It could have gone the other way, but they shot an unbelievable number. And it's like they're so hot, they're just continuing to stick with what they know. And that's a good call out on the offensive glass for North Carolina. Because Auburn is gonna have a lot of one and done possessions, but I mean, I guess we're betting on how hot they're gonna remain.
Well, I'll say this, and John can contest to this as well. I think Auburn will have to hit 10 threes tomorrow to cover the nut to possibly win. If they hit less than 10 threes, then the obviously covering that number is going to be dangerous as well. So I think they do have to hit their threes, get out in transition, try and force some turnovers. Because if I'm Auburn, you're going to have to try and speed up North Carolina, press them a little bit, see if you can rattle White a little bit, because he is a freshman. I mean, he's still playing in his first ever Sweet 16 game. He might not be able to handle the pressure. So that's kind of something to look at as well.
If that almost sounds like it might be a fun bet too, right? Betting on if Auburn hits 10 or more threes, because I mean, they've been doing just that, right? That fun game against New Mexico State, they hit 12, and then against Kansas, as you mentioned, they were completely nuts. They hit 13. So it's probably a pretty safe bet they're going to hit 10 because they're going to shoot 30 to 35.
That's a prop you guys are seeing because I don't get a lot of the actual game props. You guys are seeing a prop for Auburn over under 10 threes tomorrow?
No, maybe. I'm saying that would be a fun one. I don't know if there is one. It probably doesn't exist, but I'm saying that would be a fun one if there was.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, because if you saw 10, I'd pound that over.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that's not a bet. If that was a bet, I would hit that too. Speaking of which, real quick, I'm going to digress for a minute. Because you're in New Jersey, do you ever look at the DK or the FanDuel sports books? Because I have a buddy out in New Jersey just recently last week, and he showed me some of the player props, and we hit it, and I made him some money. There was, like, Lamonte Turner over under 10.5 points, Jordan Bone over under, like, 4.5 assists, like, super soft. Have you had a chance to look at any of that stuff yet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, the apps have been great. I primarily use FanDuel, DraftKings, and PointsBet. But, you know, they've all been really good, especially since they started. Now, as for the props for college, yeah, I mean, they've been good as well. They've been offering them up. I haven't been hitting them as hard just because I'm more of a – I haven't looked at the player end of it, more or less the DFS side of it, to be able to confirm, you know, if certain numbers are valuable or not. But, yeah, I could definitely see advantages for guys that are coming from the DFS background. If you're in Jersey and you want to, you know, throw some money instead of rooting for a game to win, you know, just – you bet your money on a player there and their props, just like you would for the NBA.
So,
yeah, because it's pretty much the same, right? Like if we're playing DFS, if I think that, you know, Lamonte Turner is going to, you know, get 4 or 5X, and then I think he's going to score 10.5 or more points, it just seemed like a super – I mean, he ended up getting, like, I don't know, 14 or 15, so it was really easy, and he hit it pretty hard. So hopefully that's going to open up to more states because, it almost made me want to go this weekend in New Jersey because it was so soft. I mean, he cleared, like – 2K off a weekend's worth of betting off just player props. So that just made me think of it real quick. I wasn't sure how much you actually had looked at that, but it seems like that would be a pretty soft thing to hit from the very beginning in November on.
Oh, yeah.
So I think obviously Auburn's going to hit a lot of threes. You know, North Carolina's a very good offensive rebounding team. So Auburn has done pretty decent rebounding the ball recently as well, but you just think that those North Carolina bigs will keep them to one and done possessions mostly?
I think for the most part, I think it's going to be tough. I'm interested to see what Roy Williams does because with all these guys that shoot threes, you know, they have a few different options. You know, do you keep a few extra guys under the rim to pull down boards? But then if you do that, it kind of hinders your transition offense. So I'm interested to see how they're going to do that. On the offensive glass side, they know Auburn likes to run. So does North Carolina keep as many guys under the rim as they usually do, or do they maybe keep a few guys out, and will that impact their offensive rebounding? So, you know, I guess the few things, which I think the first few minutes of the game will show, and I think Roy Williams will make adjustments better than Goose Pearl will. But interested to see how it starts in that manner. But ultimately, I mean, North Carolina's, regardless of how you draw it up, North Carolina has a huge, huge disparity in the
class.
Yeah. Well,
no, they do. When you look at the KenPom page, yeah, I mean, it is definitely huge. They're going to have difficulties with Luke May. They're probably going to need to play Austin Wiley some additional minutes, which they have been seemingly doing here in the last couple of games. They're going to need some big minutes out of him. They're also getting some big minutes from Javon McCormick, a 6-foot guard, backup guard to Harper. So they're going to need all hands on deck here. They're going to have to play a perfect game. I definitely think North Carolina is going to win, but I don't know. I may be in a little fishy fish, but I just feel like they're going to cover that 5. We'll see, though.
Well, what I was going to tell you, they do have a prop bet out, and I sent it to you, John, and I texted you, Walter. They do have a combined number of three-pointers that hit between the two. The over-under on it's 19.5 threes between both teams.
But both teams combined?
So, yeah, both teams combined, 19.5. So, John, you think they hit 23s tomorrow in that game?
I can't envision a world where they don't, just because you got to figure North Carolina is going to be good for 10, and Auburn's hit 12 in two straight, and they're going to get an upgrade in pace here. I have to figure that's a pretty fair number, yeah.
Yeah, I like that one too.
I mean, like I said, John, the thing is, the way I've always looked at player props is this, and especially if you know DFS like both of you guys do, sometimes easier to hit a player prop than picking the team right. I mean, I kill player props when I, like, for the Super Bowl, when those come out, I'm normally pretty good at both. So that's what I like player props sometimes. It gets you thinking, and predicting what players do is a wonderful thing sometimes.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. So, no, I like that number for sure. All right, so good information there about the rebounding differentials. Obviously, it's going to be a lot of offense. It's a very good point about chasing steam, as you said. It's a technical term. You know, I don't really bet the lines or the over-under. I kind of listen to John.
Yeah.
He seems to know what he's doing in terms of you know, money line bets. So I don't really – the over and under just seems like it would stress me out too much, you know, trying to fade a basket here. Hey, I need one more basket. That just seems like I already am under a lot of stress for the DFS side of things. So that's exactly what
killed me. No, Walter, no. See, I'm not a total guy. I never have been, never will be, because I'll tell you what I would tell John, and he can kind of contest to this. A total is a straight-up guess. There's zero way to handicap what a final score is going to be. I mean, yeah, you could look at the pace boost and assume that the game is going to go over, but then all of a sudden, somehow the game is slowed down, and the most illogical thing in the world happens. So,
it goes to overtime, right? And you can't predict overtime. Even though we thought that game might go OT, I mean, you 99 points for Purdue, you probably didn't think that was going to happen.
No, you can't handicap that stuff. It's why I tell you, like, on live betting, if I see that a total is 136.5 pregame, and then the in-game's like 158.5, then I would take the under, because it's a 22.5 point advantage off the regular line. That's a totally different deal than betting a pregame total. So,
now,
yeah,
Dunk, real quick, Dunk, what do you think about for DFS players? Because I have a few people that's up to me that look at this and they seem to do well with it. You know, they'll monitor a line. What was it? It was a couple weeks before the season ended. I think it was West Virginia TCU, and suddenly the money started coming on the over, and it started moving the line pretty significantly. So people started stacking that game up, and I can't remember if that game went to overtime or not, but it went way over, and multiple guys went 5 or 6x. Do you think that's something in DFS you can look at?
That game went triple overtime.
Yeah, that's right. I had Jordan McCabe in my team at 3-8.
I think that it's a different conversation when you're referencing how you would approach a game betting it and how you would approach a game in DFS. Your question is more correlated towards DFS. If you're seeing a line move, that means there's a lot of money moving the line. which has a different meaning if I was going to bet the game. But if I'm referencing DFS, so I'm seeing a lot of money move a line. Yeah, you'd probably think, or at least you want to assume, you know, hey, either sharp money or a ton of money is forcing books to move this line 3 or 4 points. Let me jump in on the over. Now, the fact it went to 3 overtimes, that couldn't be predicted. That was just variance. It is what it is. But yeah, you know, did the game go over in regulation?
I think it was pretty close. I'll have to look at it here because I don't remember what the total was. I just remember a lot of people I mean, I already had a lot of that game anyways, but it just – I mean, it worked out for people who full stacked it after. And, I mean, of course, I know that, but we have a lot of new listeners who haven't really played. You know, they're kind of new, so I want to – and with the sports betting starting to get legalized in a lot more places, kind of wanted to get, you know, your statement and your thoughts on that kind of thing because it is a question I get asked a lot.
I think you take each situation somewhat differently. I mean, I used to leverage that a lot for college basketball and even for college football. You know, if you see a line move, you know, even like 3 to 4% off open, you know, you have to start to assume that, you know, hey, look, smart money is coming in on the over. Let me at least make sure I have exposure there. Maybe you don't need extra exposure, Walt, but you want to make sure you have exposure to those types of games if you weren't already. Because keep in mind, if you're seeing it, that means everybody else is seeing it, and they're going to adjust their models or their perceptions accordingly. So, you know, at least at minimum to protect yourself, make sure you're always exposed when you see that 3 to 4% blind move like you saw in that one game from TCU.
Yeah. I really like how you said this is the over, this is the number, you know, instead of going into it blindly and just saying, hey, this is over, I need to hit this, having that knowledge to say, okay, this is what I'm comfortable betting, and also having the discipline to say, hey, you know what, I missed it at 160, I should have moved faster, now it's 166, you know, it doesn't, why would I chase that, you know, having the discipline not to chase it, and I see that a lot with people who get a little excited or, you know, they have a winning night, and the very next day, they're hitting everything that they can. They're betting everything. They're entering every GPP they can. They're not used to having that kind of money, you know, and they don't have the discipline.
Yeah, and I never understand that. I understand why the people do it that way. Like, you know, hey, look, I hit a few bets, I hit a few parlays.
Right? I mean, it's time.
I hit a few parlays. I'm on a heater. You convince yourself now that like you can make you'll make more bets than you normally would, and then you end up slowly losing it, but. The problem with that mindset is like people think like, oh, I'm playing with house money, right? Like the whole house money thing is a fallacy because it's your money. You just have more of it. So you're just taking more of your money. You're just taking more of your money and putting it in less favorable positions. You know, like maybe you spent the last 6 hours researching 10 games, right? And in those 10 games, you go 8-2. So you pick up 6 units or nearly 6 units. So then it's only 10 o'clock at night. And now you have the late West Coast stuff starting. And you're like, hey, you know what? With this extra money, let me just make a few extra bets for shits and giggles. Well, then you wake up and realize you lost 2 or 3 units on those shits and giggles bets. And for what? You spent all this time researching the games you did well on and you won to then only throw away on coin flips after that with your extra money. And you see this all the time in the sports betting industry. And I understand it. Like, I've been a part of it, so I get why people do it. You would figure you get poked enough. You know, you'll start to say, ow, and you see it too often, and you see people get burned by it. And on the opposite side of that spectrum, Walt, people do it to chase as well. So, you know, create the same scenario. You go 2-8 on games you researched, and maybe you just had a few balls not bounce your way. So maybe a few balls bounce your way. Maybe you're 50-50. Maybe you are 8-2. Either way, you're 2-8. The West Coast games are on. You're like, all right, here, let me fund some more money. Let me go 3 or 4 units. Now you're betting 3 and 4 units or, you know, whatever, 3 or 4 times your normal bet on games you didn't even research with the hopes that you'll get it back. You know, meanwhile, you could lose that game or lose a few games that night and then wind up being down, you know, a whole boatload of money because, you know, you don't understand. Like the best in this lose 4 times out of 10. So, you know, you have to just swallow that pill from the beginning. You're going to lose at minimum 4 times out of 10 if you're really good. And if you're somewhere in between, you know, it'll be even more than that. But too many people can't swallow the idea of ending the day in a loss, and ultimately it burns them in the long run.
And being able to, you know, the big thing when you have a losing day is to be able to look at it and say, here's the reason why. And if it was truly bad variance, you know, being able to suck it up and know that happened. Or, you know, like I lost, you know, I made the Sweet 16 at Mania. A couple years ago I made a bad swap, lost Mania, and I was tore up about it. It took me weeks to get over it. this last time, you know, I swapped a Kyle guy, but he shot 0 for 10. You know, it's a 44% three-point shooter. He hits four of them, I advance. And I got over it in like an hour because I couldn't control it, right? So that was the maturity for me over the last couple of years, being able to understand that, hey, I lost because of this variance. Now, I also lose sometimes because I make mistakes, and I'm not too proud to admit that. But I know in that certain situation, what's helped me is I realized that was a bad, you know, it's a bad beat. You know, he shot terribly. I really couldn't do anything about that. So that's the important thing, you know, because I love that there's more states opening up for this. I'm not a Mr. Mom that wants to control people at all. People spend the money they want to spend. I would like people to be around that sub to us or follow us or are in this community to not go broke. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm at with like the information, because I feel like there's a lot of new people that are coming into it amazes me, because you know, you feel like you've been playing DFS and betting for a long time, Dunk, right, Johnny, myself. So when people are now subbing to me or following me on Twitter and they're asking me questions, they didn't know that. Okay, so there's a lot more new people in this, and I want them to have that information, that mindset, and all the information. So I was very excited to get you on the show, especially for the betting aspect, because it sounds like more and more states are going to have this soon.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Johnny.
And what John was saying about people not able to handle ending the night on a loss, Walter, our friend Russ is exactly that, and it's why he is where he is. But the thing is, I won 26 grand in one day. It doesn't really ever faze me because I know what I did to get there. But I'm also not the guy that's going to put 26K on one game, because there's another thing that people don't understand about betting. I know John does, and I know a lot of people don't get it, but it's bankroll management. Because if you crack them, and then you get greedy, and then put 30% of your bankroll that you created out there, then you're incredibly stupid. So
no,
that's
absolutely
another aspect of it, Walter. You have to be disciplined. I lost to Michigan tonight, Walter. I didn't do nothing else tonight. I probably obviously should have bet Oregon 8.5, but whatever. I mean, it's
no. And you know what? This is the other thing that people don't take into account. I don't think, especially for the tournament. And DFS especially, you know, we're working with smaller slates. Everybody has the same info at this point. The projection guys have the data to run their models. People know the teams. The best thing about CBB for me is that every year the teams are usually different. Not a lot of, you know, guys return, sure, but it's not like the NBA where it's been solved, quote unquote. And everybody knows James Harden in this percentage of time he does this move. Whereas in college, there's people that, you know, they don't know. So the relevancy to that is at this point, you know, DFS especially, the edge is a little bit lighter. So the sports betting part is a little better. But, you know, with the variance, it's still going to run bad sometimes, and that's important. And, Johnny, you've been running like a god lately. So, you know what? You had to take a lump tonight just as a reminder of what it's like to lose. But let's go to this next game here. Virginia Tech versus Duke. KenPom has it 75-70 in favor of Duke. Close game. 333rd in pace is Virginia Tech. Duke, obviously, a little bit faster. They are 18th in tempo ranking. Important thing for Virginia Tech, they got Justin Robinson back. That was absolutely huge for them. I thought the way they were talking, it sounded like he wasn't going to play ever again for them in college, at least. He's played almost 30 minutes in both games. Looked pretty solid. He had 13-2-4 last game against Liberty for 25 fantasy points. Having him back is absolutely huge. Ty Outlaw had some sort of marijuana possession charge, arrest, whatever that actually was. He did pass his drug test today. Is going to play in this game, which is very important for Virginia Tech as well. I don't really like any of the Virginia Tech guys. You know, I like them, Blackshear, J-Rob, and all that, but as far as using them tomorrow on DraftKings, they're priced right about where they should be. You know, Blackshear priced at 7-6 is kind of his price without J-Rob, so with him back, I like him much lower, you know, high sixes, low sevens. Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, 10-6 and 10-2. You know, Zion, I can't tell you to ever fade Johnny Zion. I know you're an R.J. Barrett guy, but Zion has 55 against UCF, 50 against UNC, and then, you know, a couple of 35s in the middle there. you were talking to me about player props, and they're both, you know, 20-plus. I kind of question if Zion's going to go for 24 actual points or more, if Barrett can actually get it as well, especially against a Virginia Tech team that plays extremely slow and has the defensive chops to kind of, you know, give one of those guys trouble. I feel like they could give Barrett more trouble than Zion. Well, what do you recommend we do here, Johnny? Are you DFS wise? I know you love Barrett. So you're probably leaning him, but this should be a Zion game, right?
No, here's the deal. John's gonna be on the boat with this one as well. Duke had the scare that they needed to have. I mean, they should have lost Central Florida. That's the reality of the situation we're in here, but. That made perfect sense to me, and the aspect is Johnny Dawkins knows Coach K, Aubrey Dawkins knows the program. It was one of those weird things where it was just a matchup thing, and Doc was 7-6. Here's the problem. I'm probably taking the Zion prop bet tomorrow, the 24.5, because here's the problem. If the man's on the floor for 35 to 40 minutes, Virginia Tech is just not going to have an answer for him. I mean, Bears prop, it's because here's the thing that I told you, Walter, just like with Del John. One of them's going over, one of them's going under. And Barrett had a really crappy game for his standards in his last game. And I know Virginia Tech plays defense, and Buzz Williams, his game plan is basically this. Stop the other four guys, Zion's going to get his. Because that's what you're going to have to do, because Zion's going to do what he's going to do regardless of anything, but I will say this. It's a little bit more difficult taking the Zion prop bet, knowing that the motherfucker cannot really make free throws the way he should. And you know that bothers me. But in terms of betting-wise, I'm definitely moneyline Duke. I think they probably cover the 7, which is where it sits right now. For the simple fact, you have to assume they're going to play better against Virginia Tech than they did against UCF, especially because Virginia Tech did beat them without Zion, of course. It's just, it's a neutral court for the NCAA tournament, and Duke dodged a big-time bullet in their last game. And normally, when a team dodges a bullet like that, and they're one of the favorites, and I believe Duke's 2.5-1 to cut the Nets down right now, they survive one scare and then they win the whole fucking thing. So I do think Duke wins tomorrow. I do think they cover as well. And I do like Zion's prop. And I would probably be riding Zion in DFS as well. On the Virginia Tech side of things, Walter, I do tend to look at more value there because here's the problem. I can't sit down and tell you I like any other guards for one very important reason. Trey Jones shooting somebody down. He's too good defensively, whether it's Nicholas Walker or whether it's J-Rod. Someone's going to be stopped by Trey Jones. So I can't really back a guard here for Virginia Tech, especially what the prizes are. Blackshear has to deal with Zion. So there's a possibility that he picks up too quick. And then you got Outlaw, who, I mean, he might play good tomorrow, despite the distraction. I don't really feel comfortable backing any Virginia Tech guys here.
What are you thinking on this game, Dunk?
This is probably going to be my favorite bet for tomorrow, and I am by no means a blue blood guy. If anything, I fade them more often than not, but Duke is my absolute favorite play for tomorrow. I'm going to bet him first half and game. I'm seeing that down to 7, which is great because I can get him at 3.5 first half. Here's why. There's a few different reasons. So, for one thing, these two teams played, as you guys mentioned, on February 26th at Tech. That line was Duke minus 3. So now we take into account a neutral court. You know, okay, so spread out 4 points, 3.5 to 4 points for that. That game, again, was in Tech. This one's on a neutral court. So lean 3.5 points in favor of Duke there. That lands you at 7. Big issue, though, there was no Zion, right? So Zion's worth easily worth 5 to 7 points per game.
Yep.
So when you look at it from that, again, Justin Robinson wasn't there, so maybe subtract maybe 1 to 2 specifically. But it's hard to judge. But ultimately, I think this line is about 3.5 or 4 points wrong. I think that Duke proved that they can hit the threes if they need to, and I know Virginia Tech's pack line defense will force Duke into wide open threes. But even still, I mean, Zion is an absolute freak. And also, Virginia Tech shot something crazy, like 60% from the field. Do I have that right? I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I feel like they shot almost like 60% from the field. That won't happen with Zion in there, clogging the lanes and forcing turnovers, and even being a somewhat of a rim protector. So I think this line is off by a few points. I get why people are liking Tech. It's a big number, and everybody just watches it lose to Central Florida. But I mean, not lose, almost lose to Central Florida. But as Johnny stated, every championship team or every team that wins a championship always has a game like this. Villanova almost lost last year to, I think, West Virginia. And Duke was obviously a rim roll away from losing this one here. I think they come out with a ton of energy. I think, you know, they're all pumped. And, you know, look, this team I know historically is one of the worst three-point shooting teams ever to be in the Sweet 16. But at the end of the day, these are talented college kids who are going to be in the NBA. At least three or four of them will be. You leave them open, they're going to make their threes. Bottom line. And Virginia Tech will force this team into wide open threes all game. I got to assume Duke will knock them down. And even if they don't, have Zion clog the lane a bit a few times, and that pack line defense might be rethinking itself. So I just feel like this line's a bit off. Duke has a tremendous advantage on various fronts. Look, Tech could hit their threes and make this a game and keep this close. I just feel like this is a good avenge spot for Duke off their almost loss against Central Florida.
And, John, I actually got the stats pulled up for you. Virginia Tech, in the last game against Duke, they shot 55%. They hit 8 threes. Duke, though, did hit 7 threes without Zion, and Duke without Zion still out-rebounding them by 2. That's the difference. If Duke still out-rebounded them without Zion, what the hell is going to happen with him playing tomorrow?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I think the with J Rob it gives them a better choice. But yeah, I agree with Duke winning with Zion, you know, in the lineup playing the way he's playing. There's really no way that Tech's gonna be able to stop him. All right, last game here, Houston versus Kentucky. Another situation, especially on DFS today, where the early games were the ones you wanted to target. I kind of feel like it's the same today, even though, you know, with Duke, you want to get some Duke exposure. But for me, I'm not really feeling the Kentucky-Houston game as a DFS standpoint. Although, you know, with PJ back especially, if he wasn't playing, I think I'd like Reed Travis. But this should be a good game. I know Johnny's got a lot riding on this with his future. Right now, KenPom has it 68-66 in favor of Kentucky, so it should be very close. Houston 248th in tempo ranking. Important to note, they're the 12th most efficient defense in the country per KenPom, and then Kentucky 274th in tempo, and they're the 8th most efficient defense. So two defensive juggernaut of teams playing here. You know, they're going to need production from Tyler Hero, Keldon Johnson. They can't have those kinds of first halves that they had, you know, the other night. Ashton Hagans is only 4.9 on DraftKings. He's been a guy who in smash spots at a cheap price has really sucked and then done well in bad spots at higher prices. So this feels like a classic DraftKings trap price where they're going to get a bunch of people onto Ashton Hagans, and he's going to do something like 16. The problem is I think he's just too cheap to fade at 4.9. So he's play number one in Kentucky. Probably not going to use too much Reed Travis, although at 6K I do like him quite a bit. But with PJ back, that takes a lot away from him. EJ Montgomery and Nick Richards are not really going to be plays for us with PJ most likely playing. And then for Houston, Houston has done a pretty poor job of keeping other teams' big men off the glass. They're a bit undersized, so PJ and Reed Travis should get a fair share of rebounds. But Corey Davis, man, he's playing absolutely phenomenal right now. He is priced at 7.2 on DraftKings. In the tournament thus far, he's had 50 and 38, Johnny, and he's priced at 7.2. His price went down 200 for some reason. So I have to love him. He's taken double-digit shots, at least 13 in four, each of his last four games. Definitely like him a lot.
They're going to need Armani Brooks to produce for them. He's been, you know, pretty pedestrian, 16 and 20 fantasy points. So it's just been so much Corey Davis that Armani hasn't really got into it. Now, Armani is a pretty good player to use for his peripherals. His rebounding rate is pretty solid. It's 22% combined, which is very decent for a 6'3", 195 guard. He shoots threes 39% clip. Corey Davis also shoots in the 39% clip. Kentucky is a team, even though they did a lot better than I gave them credit for against Wofford, because they have really given up some huge three-point shooting games to individuals. So I'm going to have to see it from them yet again. Wofford missed a lot of open threes, but Kentucky did do a nice job defending him as well. So they're going to have to play that same way when it comes to Corey Davis and Armani Brooks and Galen Robinson all chucking threes, because that's what they're going to plan to do. But other than those guys, I don't really mess around with Houston's, you know, like Nate Hinton, DeJean Giroux. These are all talented guys, as we talk about on every show. But I'm not going to, you know, yammer on about the same team. I definitely want to get, you know, more information from Dunks as he's on the show. Well, let me first talk to Johnny, because I know he's got the future bet here and he's been a Kentucky lover all year. You said you're going to stay off this game, right? But what does your heart tell you, man? Let's say PJ plays and he's like, I don't know, 60% healthy, that Kentucky wins?
Well, here's the thing. If he plays, he's going to be on a minute cap. So if I had to guess, I think he is going to play, but I think he's going to be available for 15 to 20 minutes. Here's the thing, though. I have been on Houston 8 separate times this year, Walter, and cashed every single time. They scare the shit out of me because of how well they play defense. And Kelvin Sampson is a pretty much a criminal. So they have a lot of things going for him that I respect. Look, what my heart tells me is if PJ plays, then somehow, some way, Kentucky will find a way to get to the Elite Eight. But would I be floored if Houston won tomorrow, knowing how good defensively they are and knowing what they have athletically? No, I wouldn't. What for Kentucky to win tomorrow, besides PJ playing the 15 to 20 minutes I think he would play, Hero and Johnson are going to have to absolutely be productive. And they're going to both have to be productive, because I don't think one of them could have a shitty game and Kentucky would be able to win.
No, I agree. What do you think, Dunk?
Wow, it really sucks that Washington's playing, because I really liked Houston. It's tough to say.
Well, there's a chance he still might not, I guess.
Oh, is there really? Okay, so I didn't hear that.
I mean,
if that's the case, that would
strong that he's going to play, though.
Yeah, what it is, John, and I just read this on Twitter, he was running and jogging in practice. Basically what Calipari said is, if he's cutting with no pain, he's pretty much playing tomorrow. But what he also said was he's playing 15 to 20 minutes instead of 30 to 35.
Okay, so he might make a small difference. Okay, so then here's the thing. Going into this tournament, I had Houston making the Final Four coming out of that entire region. I just feel like pound for pound, this is one of the best teams in college basketball. And I know at this point it's like, oh, well, obviously there's 16 teams left. But, you know, when you look at this team's losses, like they lost a game to Cincinnati for their conference championship in a game that really didn't mean anything to them. If they won it, they were going to be a 3 seed. If they lost it, they were going to be a 3 seed. So for me, motivation there was an issue in that game. I don't really look at that as a loss. They have one road loss against Temple where you could argue is the one time in the year they get caught with their pants down on the road. So I don't even look at that as a bad loss. And then they catch a UCF team at home where is a real shocker loss. So for me, they have the 3 losses, which I would basically give to every college team every year. The caught with your pants down at home, caught with your pants down on the road, and the game that doesn't mean anything, you know, for you in relevancy to your seeding. I don't really think this team has a bad loss. They haven't lost one game all year, in a game that really mattered by more than 5. Now, granted, this will be the best team they've played all year, and Kentucky's length could cause issues for this team, but man, this team has just so many scores, and Corey Davis is such a good player. I mean, you don't hear enough about him. You don't hear enough about him. How many big shots he hits, not even big shots, tough shots he hits. This team put away an Ohio State team that just mauled Iowa State. And they put them away pretty basically start to finish. Georgia State's not as bad as that score. Georgia State's not as bad as that score indicates either in the first round. But I will tell you, Kentucky barely skated out of a win against Wolford. I think a big public team. By the way, I had Wolford in that game plus 5.5, so that was kind of shitty. That was kind of shitty. But either way, I think if PJ Washington is only going to be 15 or 20 minutes, I think there's a lot of value at 3 at Houston. Again, I have them going to the Final Four. I didn't anticipate Washington playing at all in this tournament, though, or at least until they got to the Final Four, if they got there. So I anticipated this matchup being without him. The fact that he might play definitely changes things a bit. But if he's only going to be committed to 15 to 20 minutes, I do think there is extra value with that three, because even if he plays, you have to wonder if he's even going to be truly 100%. But, man, Kentucky just does it all. Like, they're – you know, they're so good offensively, they're so good defensively, and they what they do, what a lot of teams don't do, is they adjust their pace accordingly to the game. If you're a team that wants to play fast, they'll happily play fast with you, and they'll be better at it than you. If you're a team that likes to play slow, they'll slow the game down as well, and they'll really focus on the defensive end and again be better than it at you. This will be an interesting game because Kentucky is physically more talented than this team, but Houston just got that edge in them. You know, I mean. And, you know, again, so tough defensively, plenty of scores to go to when they need to. I'm really looking forward to this game. It's going to be my favorite game for tomorrow to watch. If I can get that to 3.5 or 4, maybe if Washington gets cleared to play more than 35, maybe if he gets cleared to play more than 30 minutes, if I can get 3.5 or 4, I'll definitely snatch that up with Houston.
Yep. Again, everything Sean just said, Walter, I can't disagree with. Because, like I said, I know if Washington didn't play, I would be 100% fucked. And I like here on my guy Kelvin, and I like my boy Reed Travis, but here's the problem. Without Washington, you're relying on Richards and Montgomery to stay on the floor as much as they possibly can. And you know Montgomery's a foul risk. This is the only thing that I think could be the X factor here is if Hero could stick on Davis like he did on McGee. Because the defensive job that he did on Fletcher McGee is one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen, considering how good of a shooter McGee actually is. And yes, John, I had Wofford too in that game. I had the 5.5, and yeah, I feel your pain.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of combing over Twitter also to see, and I see that same thing. And they kind of go hour to hour. Earlier today, they were really optimistic that he was going to play, and then it looks like most recently they're being cautious about it. So we'll just have to monitor it and see how it goes, because I definitely could see Houston winning this game. You're right, Corey Davis is super unheralded. No one really talks about him or that program. Speaking of which, Johnny, you know, people were saying that, you know, Samson should be jumping all over Arkansas. You know, obviously it went to someone else, Nate Oates, and Nate Oates from Buffalo. I didn't think it was an upgrade for him. I know Arkansas is, you know, obviously SEC, a good program, but
Bama.
To me it seemed like he should stay there, or in Bama, I'm sorry. It seemed like he should stay there and you know, enjoy that they have a really deep-pocketed booster that's willing to spend money. You know, he has a program that they can dominate their conference, get into the tourney, get recruits. I mean, it seems like a good little spot for him, I guess, unless there's going to be a huge pay increase.
Here's the thing, though, Walter, and John can contest to this. Sometimes the pasture isn't always greener. I mean, I'm sure he got a pay increase. Now he's going to have to deal with recruiting in the SEC, where Kentucky is still in there, and they're still Kentucky, and I don't know how long the stuff with LSU will last, and Rick Barnes is still Rick Barnes, so you never know how that's going to last, and even though apparently Tom Crean has a good recruiting class coming in, including a guy who was number one in the 2020 mock draft, which I thought was funny, because I disagree with that, he's Tom Crean. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know if Nate Oates going there is going to make Alabama, which is primarily a football school, a top 15 team in basketball year in and year out. And I like Nate Oates as a coach. I just don't think he should have taken the job.
Well, I think it was a good time for him to get out of Buffalo, but I just, the way people were talking about how it was a major upgrade over Houston for Coach Sampson, I felt like I'd disagree with that. Do you think that will be any kind of, you know, distraction for their players, or is that just such a minuscule thing at this point that they're locked and loaded and will be focused?
I mean, yes and no, but at the end of the day, he's preparing his players for a Sweet 16 game. He's not thinking, oh, as soon as the game's over, I'm jumping to Arkansas, or I'm jumping to freaking, I don't know if Sean Miller got fired yet, but if I know that was a word for 14 boys, but if Sean Miller was fired, is Sam saying, oh, I'm going to Arizona? I don't think that really factors into it. I mean, sure, if he took a job right before the game and he bounced and they were down to the system, then yeah, it would matter. But I don't really factor that in with this situation. And like I said, I've been on Houston a lot this year. I know how good they are. I just need Kentucky to win me one more game and then where I'm at in the Elite Eight.
So, real quick, Dunk, before we kind of wrap things down, who do you like for making the title game, and who do you think is going to win it all at this point?
So, I hate to sound chalky, but for me, UVA and Duke, just because I stopped watching the game, UVA won tonight, right?
Yeah, they did hold them off 1-3.
Oregon covered.
Okay. Yeah. So for me, this is the most complete UVA team I've seen that I can remember. My dad's from Virginia; he's a huge fan. My stepmom went to that school, so they're very biased, and I'm usually not on that bandwagon just because they've never had the offensive weapons. But this is the best offensive team Virginia's had since they've been on this defensive tear with Coach Bennett. But for me, on the Duke side, as I've said, I mean, look, the number one and number two overall picks are on the same team. Late in the game, they'll just find a way to squeeze games out. They'll also get calls from the refs, as we've already seen. This is just typical for Duke, but, they're going to get Virginia Tech here, and then they'll probably get, like, either Michigan State or even LSU. Whoever they're going to get, it's not going to matter. They'll reach the Final Four, which then they'll probably be matched up with who, like a Gonzaga? Is that who's in the bottom there? Or Tech,
yeah.
I guess. But either way, I would expect it to be Duke, Virginia. These two teams have been the best two teams all year. It would take. I'll tell you what. A team like Oregon wasn't going to be the type of team to beat Virginia because a team that really can speed the game up and make their shots is going to be the team that beats them. But I don't think Virginia gets really truly close to losing, like really close to losing, like Duke just did up until they get to the national championship. That team is just so complete on both sides of the ball, and they have plenty of scorers, which, again, makes them different than usual.
Yeah, I like it. How about you, John? Are you sticking with your Duke and Kentucky pick or what?
Well, from a betting standpoint, I needed to be that, John, because you better believe if that is a matchup, I'm hedging off it and not really cutting my losses, but securing a profit. I mean, I do think it can be Duke, Kentucky, and I hope it is for my sake. But honestly, and I see it, and it pains me. But, John, I am somehow seeing a fourth Duke and North Carolina matchup.
It definitely could be.
I mean, because here's the problem. I'm looking at North Carolina, and I got to be honest, John. I wasn't that high on them the earlier part of the year. I mean, Roy Williams tirated twice. They got blown out by Michigan, and they got blown out by Louisville at home by 21 points, which is still the most bizarre result in a basketball game I've seen all year. They just didn't strike me as a team that could get a one seed and pretty much the Sweet 16, and they definitely can beat Auburn. I just, I kind of, I, it's kind of weird to say, but I kind of underestimated my wounds a little bit.
Yeah, I think I'm interested in this Gonzaga Texas Tech game, but I think Gonzaga. I still have it as Gonzaga versus North Carolina. Even though I think Auburn has a chance to beat North Carolina, I think if they get past Auburn, I do think they make the finals there. This Virginia team, you're right, Dunk, is a lot better offensively this year than they were last year. Even though they're kind of struggling in the tournament with their shooting a bit, especially Kyle Guy, but I with their defense, they're going to be in any game at any time. So I appreciate you taking time to stop by. I know you're a busy guy. What's the YouTube channel that people can find you at? Because you're giving out fire free picks on your YouTube channel all the time.
It's just sports with facts. I do a video with I do most of the videos, but my dad does a few of them. My dad's been a pro sports bettor for over 30 years. Never really had a full time job. That's what he's been doing for quite some time. So he's had the channel for a little bit, but now I do most of the videos, and he comes in from time to time. So, it's just Sports with Facts. If you go to YouTube and search it, you'll pop up. Definitely subscribe. We definitely give free content, and what differentiates us from a lot of others is the transparency. You know, we don't sit there and ask for blowjobs when we win a game, or cry when we lose a game. We're definitely giving you guys the entire perspective of the industry, not just the glamour, not just the bullshit, definitely the whole bit. So yeah, just head over and subscribe. You'll definitely enjoy it.
I've watched a couple of them already, and I think it's a really good time for you to do this with the influx of new people betting. So appreciate it, man. You've always been a huge, I've really respected your work, and especially when you played DFS, you were one of the best. Do you think you'll be getting back into the DFS realm here next season, or are you kind of cool on that? Not big enough prize pools for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, kind of live my life day by day. I don't want to say I will or won't, but I will or won't, but definitely I'll have to join at least a few contests, right? I mean, I feel like a virgin coming into these next year, but no, I'll have to join a few. And it's same here. I have a tremendous amount of respect for both of you and Walter doing great things over there at RotoCurve. So definitely I hope more and more subscribers for you there, because your content's bar none the best in the industry for college basketball. So you should be proud of what you do there. And Johnny, crush Vegas again, man. Don't be wasting that money on strippers or cocaine. Definitely make sure you're you're putting that money to good use.
Oh yeah, nah, John. I already with 15 of that I locked that away in a CD. I can't touch for a couple years. I mean, I got 11 to play with. I have a question for you, John. Have you ever seen stretch in a day? Have you ever seen a stretch in a day where someone won 26 grand in one day?
Oh, his dad, I'm sure.
I've not at the sports bet, but I've been at multiple craps tables where numbers have been pretty much higher up than that. They started taking out the stacks of the orange chips, which are the 5Ks. But it was.
Yeah.
But no, look, sports betting wise, you don't ever take that stuff for granted, Johnny. Those are borderline once in a lifetime things. So I'm happy you won, and I can't stress enough. Don't waste the money.
Nah, John. Like I said, I mean, it was definitely a good run. I mean, like I said, tomorrow though, I'm gonna be on Duke. It's more of the fact Zion pretty much adds like 6 or 7 points to him, and I don't. The thing is with Duke, I know they have weaknesses, but Zion covers most of those up when he's out there.
Oh, he absolutely does. Dunk, I really appreciate it, man. We're going to get out of here. I'm going to tweet out the show link for people to follow, and then, to follow you on Twitter if they don't already. Got to get you maybe one more. I know you're busy, but maybe one more show before it's all said and done this season.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks again for having me, guys, and good luck tomorrow.
All right, man. He's the great Uncle Donkle. If you guys don't know him, I'm going to tweet out his Twitter handle. Very smart guy. He back in the day at DFS, he was the dude. He was wiping the floor with us. Him and Sox 22. Just we were their water boys. So, Johnny, we're going to bounce back tomorrow on the betting side of things. We're going to bounce back on DFS. I had a pretty, you know, mediocre night overall in everything. But again, we're not going to cry about it. We're gonna bounce back and do, as you say, do what we do, right?
And that's what we do. And like I said, it's a bump in the road. It happens. And like I said, there's not a sports bettor in the world that hits 100% of the bets he plays. And if there is one, I would shake his hand and say, okay.
Absolutely. All right, man. Good. Best of luck. I'll be talking to you real soon.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, everyone, that, again, supported the show tonight by listening. You know, as the slates are getting smaller and smaller, there's not a lot of DFS to talk about. We know these teams inside and out. So, as Johnny says, do what you do. Make a good lineup. I'm going to be giving out some prize picks, you know, information tomorrow on who I like there. You know, they're doing some great stuff there at myprizepicks.com. You still sign up under my promo link of WALT, W-A-L-T. We don't have the promo tournament going on anymore, but you do get a 50% deposit bonus on your initial deposit for new members. So definitely check that out. And we'll get Dunkel on, you know, one more show, probably for the Final Four. Get some Final Four bets in, some NIT talk, things of that nature, all right? Appreciate it. Thanks very much, guys. This has been an absolutely amazing season. Let's finish strong, all right?
Yeah. DA got that dope.